All right, so it is at this time every Sunday that we welcome Gavin Gray to the show to give us an update on all that's happening in the UK and Europe. Very good morning to you, Gavin. How are you?
Yeah, very good, Sarah Jane. How are you doing?
Yeah, not too bad at all, actually. All good and proper here. So listen, I see that all UK adults are to be offered the COVID vaccine jab by the 31st of July, which seems like it signals good news in terms of lockdown and lockdown easing. What's the latest on the UK's lockdown plans?
Yeah, so the number have been given the first dose of the coronavirus vaccine, either one of the two that are available here in the UK, has now reached more than 17 million people. That's just under one third of this country. The doctors are currently jabbing people who are over the age of 60 and also those who are clinically vulnerable. They're working their way then down the age groups, but they now do predict, as you mentioned there, that all adults will be able to be given it by the end of July. It's been a massive logistical achievement thus far to be able to do what they've done. And I think, consequently, many people are thinking, you know what, crikey, they're actually doing what they said they were going to do. Mm. But why, so far, do we not know the details of how the lockdown is to be eased? Many people say we should have clear data targets that set out when and how the lockdown will be eased. Of course, we went into lockdown here a week before Christmas, and this time on, we're still waiting for news about how we will be unlocked. The figures, the number of cases, the number of deaths, the number of people in the hospital with the virus, they're all heading in the right direction, quite steeply. But there are many people who are saying this must be the last lockdown the UK has to endure. We have to get the easing of these restrictions right. And having told schools that they might well be able to reopen by the 8th of March, then the schools said, well, we need at least 2 weeks' notice to get things up and running. The government says it will actually give a full plan for its lockdown easing on Monday. So tomorrow we'll find out a lot more about how this government intends to get us out of lockdown while saying we will never have to lock down again.
Meanwhile, the consumer group, which has revealed that millions of people have lost out financially because of coronavirus restrictions and flights that they were unable to get onto.
Yes, it's estimated more than 2 million people have actually not got their money back, according to Which. So Which is a group that looks after consumers' rights, and many people go to it when they have a complaint. Now, of course, we've had tremendous travel restrictions here in place in the UK, with those coming back from high-risk countries, as they're being deemed, having to stay in quarantine hotels. Among those list of 33-odd countries is, of course, South Africa, fear over the variants that are now doing the rounds. But a lot of people have booked flights, so keen they are to go away on foreign travel to get a bit of a holiday, or in other cases, I think, just to have a break. But a lot of the time, the government announced quite late on the countries to which it could and could not allow people to come back from without having to isolate, and which it was starting to ban flights to and from. And what's happened is a whole load of people have booked flights, paid for them, and then the government has turned around and said, well, actually, no, now if you go to this country, you're going to have to isolate on your way back. You're going to have to do this, that, and the other. And people haven't taken those flights. But the legislation, the regulations say that if the airline doesn't cancel the flight, then customers may not legally be entitled to a refund. And so consequently, unless the flight that you've booked has actually been cancelled, if it still goes ahead, you might not get your money back simply because you were adhering to government advice. And it is a very, very grey area with many families. Of course, if you're going for a family of four, the booking of the flights can be expensive. And the various consumer groups here are looking into the fact that the airlines have simply, they say, not played fair, some of them, with the refund of the flights.
Mm. Next up, a story that absolutely tickled me when I saw this trending on, or not trending, but it was on Twitter in the week. I laughed out loud. There's a guy by the name of Liam Thorpe, who I think is the one of the editors or something at the Liverpool Echo, which is a newspaper or whatever. And he posted this tweet about how he was able to, or rather, he was contacted about getting a vaccine. And he was baffled as to why, because he's a 32-year-old man, no underlying health conditions, but he was offered an early vaccine. Tell us why, Gavin.
Well, because the doctor entered his height as 6.2 centimetres instead of 6'2", or 188 centimetres. So, in other words, decimal point in the wrong place. Well, and in this case, of course, using a different measure, metric or old money measure. So instead of 6'2", he was 6.2 centimetres. And when they combined with his weight, that gave him a body mass index, a BMI, of 28,000. Now, that's 1,000 times higher than the UK average, and would have meant he was so fat that he couldn't have walked, let alone done anything else. But, of course, the computer doesn't analyze this. Instead, those who are clinically vulnerable with a body mass index much higher than they should have are automatically offered a vaccine. And so, consequently, yes, the 32-year-old who is 6'2" inches and, you know, is I wouldn't say he's overweight, he's sort of average weight, suddenly got called in to be vaccinated. Now, at the moment, as I said, they're doing the over 60s, they're doing the those clinically vulnerable. So the idea this 32-year-old who's in perfectly good health would have got vaccinated is very odd. Anyway, he owned up to it. He got in touch with the GP, and there was a lot of laughter going on, he said, when he told them, because, of course, even the under-50s with no underlying health condition are not expected to be vaccinated until well into the year. And many people have said, good for you, really pleased you did own up. It was the only the right thing to do. It was very honest of you to do that. But what I love, Sarah Jane, is he said on Twitter, when I told my mum I'd been classed in the clinically obese category, she said, well, perhaps this is the wake-up call you need.
Honestly, Gavin, when I saw that this week, I thought it was so, so funny. And then somebody else replied to him, a guy called James Felton, and said, I feel like they should have been in touch earlier with other concerns, namely the fact that there's this, you know, this 17 and a half stone, 6.2 centimetre person just blobbing their way around England. Yeah, very, very funny indeed. If you're just joining us this morning, we're on the line with our UK correspondent, Gavin Gray, for all the latest going on in the UK and Europe. So to Scotland now, I have to say Nicola Sturgeon has been my absolute favourite since she basically said to Donald Trump when he was still president, no, don't come here for your visit to Turnberry, your Scottish golf resort. It's not an essential purpose, and basically told him to pack his bags and away we ye, Donald. But she's now ordering that the EU flag must be flown on Scottish government buildings, which seems odd to me.
Oh, yes, it is true. At the moment, relations, I would say, between Scotland and England are not good. No. That would be an understatement. Lots of things to blame for that. Many Scots believe that they should have voted yes for the independence referendum. That, of course, was in 2014 and said to be the once-in-a-generation vote. Well, they lost that. But Nicola Sturgeon, the First Minister of Scotland and the leader of the Scottish Nationalist Party, says that they want another independence referendum. And the reason that they're putting forward is, well, apart from the polls showing actually now, there is a growing support for independence. The reason is because Scotland voted heavily in favour of staying within the European Union. In other words, voted no to Brexit. But, of course, it was the vote of the UK overall that got counted, and Brexit was voted on by the majority of population. And so now we discover in various bits of pieces of background information that Nicola Sturgeon has said that the EU flag, which is a circle of gold stars on a blue background, was sent in new Scottish government guidance saying the First Minister has instructed that the European flag is flown from Scottish government buildings on a daily basis, except for specific flag flying dates. Now, Not only, therefore, will they have the Saltire of Scotland, which is the blue background and the white cross on it, they are also flying the EU flag, but no Union flag, or the British flag, the Union Jack, as some call it. Instead, the only day she is suggesting that that is flown in Scotland, even though Scotland is still part of it, and roughly half the population want to stay as part of the UK, is only to be flown on Remembrance Day. And as you can imagine, this news has come out and been absolutely... Well, some have laughed. Some have found it very amusing. Some think, well, good on you, Nicola Sturgeon. And others think just how pathetic she has become. Those are what various critics would say of her. Facts absolutely fixated on flag flying. Whereas I'm afraid Scotland's educational achievements is very, very bad, and she's in charge of education. Scotland's number of drunks and number of people who are reliant on alcohol is among the worst in Europe, and she's in charge of public health. And also they criticise her because the number of those addicted to drugs has not gone down, and again, it's among the worst rates in Europe, and she should be doing something about that. But there we go. Make sure you get the flags flight, critics would say.
Yeah, indeed, indeed. We've got time for one more, Gavin. Now, what you may not know about me is that when I was a child, I spent an awful lot of time wandering the beaches of Camber Sands with my mother, trailing behind my mother. Yeah, yeah, trailing behind my mother, who had a metal detector. Now, at the time, I was mortified. Can you imagine? My brother and I just absolutely devastated. There was my mum wandering up and down the beach, and she would always have about 50 people following behind. It was she was like the Pied Piper of Camber Sands. So metal, it seems that metal, and she came up with some really good stuff, actually. But she's not alone in her metal detectorism, because a chap on the Isle of Man has discovered this stunning collection of gold and silver Viking jewellery.
Yes, he's they found quite an amazing and extensive collection of Viking jewellery. He's a retired police officer, made the find on farmland in the north of the island. And the hoard contains a gold arm ring and a what's been described as a huge silver brooch dating back more than 1,100 years approximately. Now, all of this we're now learning was unearthed in December. But, of course, they've wanted to keep the site of it completely secret to stop people just going over, anyone who fancied trying to have a dig around. They wanted to maximize what they found out of this. And archaeologist experts are saying it's the arm ring in particular that's a very, very rare find. And it's going to be extremely interesting to get it all brushed up, get it all sorted and cataloged. It looks like it's been declared treasure. And that means that all the items belong to the crown, but that the finder is rewarded. It was found on farmland as well, and of course the farmer would as well be entitled to some money. Now, a large hoard of Viking treasure found in Lancashire on the mainland 10 years ago was valued at £110,000, or roughly £2.2 million South African rand. This hoard is said to be bigger with some more interesting bits in it, so it just gives you an idea about how big that is. And just one very quick addition to that, you know, Sarah Jane, they're saying that a recent find in Cambridgeshire of Roman-era Britain goods found a unique insight, possibly, into the hairstyles among native men of Roman-era Britain, and that is because a small alloy figure found a couple of years back shows the man had a mullet. In other words, a haircut, neat back and sides, but longer at the back, much longer at the back.
Gosh, all these treasures. You're the only treasure I need, Gavin Gray.
Ah,
we'll chat to you again soon. Have a lovely Sunday.
Take care now.